Strategic Hot Box with Dr. Brandi Love Stankovic. Discussing leadership, business, and how to take control of your life and achieve greatness. From the streets of Las Vegas, energized, informed, and never diluted, it's time to kick some ass.
Welcome to the Strategic Hot Box. My name is Brandi Stankovic, and we are here to talk about a very exciting topic that I think is perfect for leadership. We're going to talk about sex and relationships. Woohoo! We have cheering from the studio, and I'm already blushing. And we haven't even started, Kat. This is going to be good. But I have a very good friend of mine and a brilliant thinker and achiever in this area, and that is Dr. Kat Hertlein. Did I do that right? I even asked you. Okay. Oh, yeah. All right. So we're setting on the right foot. And she is going to talk to us about these topics, but I'm going to frame the discussion first, as always. So welcome to our discussion on sex and leadership. So what is a hot box? What is a strategic hot box? I get that question from time to time. And I want to just offer to you that it's a place for the exhaled to also be inhaled. So in a very, you know, tangible way, it could be when you used to smoke pot, and by used to I mean last weekend. No, I'm just kidding. But like the idea of just that kind of room. Or if you think about it from a theoretical standpoint, which we want to do here at the Strategic Hot Box, that is the ideas and thoughts that we have, we're able to munch on and chew together and discuss together in a very real way, an authentic way, and deliver education as such and talk about topics that are real. And one of the things that we're going to dig into, and obviously we frame it with the idea of sex and leadership, but really there's an underlying theme here, and that's just health and mental health and the wellness of human beings and how this all plays together. Because as you know, we've got the learn, the love, and the kick ass. The learn, we'll talk about the meaty topic. And then the love, we always focus on these relationships, and the health of those relationships is so powerful to business, but it's also powerful to individual leaders and who we are as human beings, the love that we feel from day to day. And then of course, as always, I'm going to leave you with the top five ways to kick ass and start doing things very differently today. So in the topic of sex and leadership, I want to talk about mental health. And I think this is a very relevant topic to leadership today. We're seeing it all over the news, or the bad sides of mental health all over the news, which is unfortunate. We're seeing it from a very young age in schools with kids. And maybe there's a lot of theories out there of where this begins. And I'm sure that Kat will enlighten us in just that, the whole realm of that and this burgeoning problem, I guess, you know, but flourishing, this issue that is out there, challenge. But one of the things that I'm seeing at organizations is a lot of times wellness campaigns don't also include mental wellness. And I think mental wellness is just like everything, right? And if you do have a wellness campaign or a wellness program at your organization, make sure to include the mental side of that as well, because really physical health and mental health go hand in hand. We feel better when we exercise. We want to exercise when we feel better, right? I mean, all these things kind of go together. But an example of that is my son is in the spelling bee today, as a matter of fact. Very exciting. He's in first grade in the spelling bee. And he went through round one of the spelling bee, and he made it to round two. And I mean, we're not talking super intense spelling bees, the ones that you see on TV. I mean, this is like local school spelling bee. However, very big deal for him and our family. And last night, we were going through some of the words, and we're spelling some of the words. And I don't know about you, but the English language is just cray cray, right? So he asked me, why is motel E-L, but bottle is T-T-L-E? And I'm like, first grader, I don't know, right? Like sitting on the couch, going like, I don't know, right? But we like came up with all these tricks to just essentially memorize some of these different differences of words. And those English teachers that are listening are probably shaking their heads with their hands on their hips going, did this woman not pay attention all in her class? But there's so many different nuances in the language that there aren't real immediate or real, things, easy ways to understand why it happens. And so in that moment of trying to remember these words, he got very frustrated. And then he just bursts out into tears halfway through studying. And I'm just like, whoa. You know, and we had this conversation of, hey, the first thing I want you to do when you get up in that spelling bee is stand up and think to yourself, I can do this. I am smart. I can spell. And I want you, I was like, practice doing it. And he did it. And you could just see the smile on his face happen when he was like saying it to himself in his head, because that's everything. So he misspells a word or whatever, right? And we'll get through it together as a family. And I'm sure he'll be disappointed in himself. But the most important is to stand up there and know that he can make it happen. And that to me is such a powerful thing to leadership and a part of this mental health journey. And we don't have people supporting one another as much as we should in this capacity of how do people feel in a mental way every single day. And really the hurt and pain that we have in organizations usually, in my experience, will start in a mental situation or a mental angst or stress. And then it'll then find itself, you know, being born into physical illness as well. So you'll see it happening where people get sick, but it started in this place of stress or mental, just mental downness. Those are super technical terms. Good thing we have a doctor on the show today. So my doctor-ness is off the hook. Okay, so to frame this, the final couple things I want to share with you before we get Dr. Kat on here to share the real goodies with us is, one, I love pickup lines. It's like one of my favorite things ever. And if you've ever been around me late night or even just seen Twitter, I love to post pickup lines. They're legitimately one of my favorite things. And I'm very confident in saying that. Most of the time when I ask somebody, what's your best pickup line or your favorite pickup line? They'll go, oh, I don't know. Those are so dumb. Like, I don't listen to that, whatever. Right. And that's usually the thing that I get from everybody. But then they'll come up with some silly pickup line or if I could rearrange the alphabet, you know, I'd put you and I together or happiness. I thought happiness started with H, why does mine start with you? You know, these moments of love, I'm sure, that are happening to our listeners and watchers. But that, yeah, I think that someone just threw up. These lines are good, okay? No, but now the idea is, the whole point of me bringing this up and the point of me using them in conversation as a social kind of tool is the fact that it makes people feel good. Rarely do you hear a pickup line and think about things like sex. Think about that first moment that your husband or partner or wife hit on you, right? And whether it was awkward or not, that moment that you shared, that spark that you shared, it was a beautiful spark. And it makes people feel good to think about that and to feel that. And pickup lines make people feel good. And everybody in this world deserves to feel sexy. You deserve to feel sexy. And I believe in that. And I will do everything I can to make you feel that way, because that's a powerful tool and it'll make you feel more confident in the things that you're doing. So final thought is that confidence ties into leadership. And of course, that really lives in the place of emotional intelligence from my perspective, that really being emotionally intelligent and understanding yourself and your impact on other individuals, your awareness, your management, your empathy, you know, just your social aptitude comes down to the ability to recognize and be around these emotions, and emotions like angst or stress or some of those mental health things we were talking about, as well as emotions of confidence and sex and those things, are all tools in your toolbox. And being recognizing those as how they impact you as an individual is really important. So I would like now to formally introduce you to Dr. Catherine Hertline, and she is a professor and program director at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, although I went to the University of Nevada, Reno, so we're kind of...
A little bit football challenged.
I don't know.
Our friendship has a little bit of a dip in football season, but we're okay January.
Right, so we're fine. She's got a bachelor in science from Truman State, a master's in science, it looks like, from Purdue, and a PhD from Virginia Tech.
True.
So you have been around the block in this area.
I've been around the block. Thank you for saying that on the air.
I love that everything becomes a reference to her. This is great. This is doing everything for me. And you're also a licensed marriage and family therapist.
I am. I have a private practice in town in addition to the university fund.
That's amazing. And so that really, you're seeing how this plays out in an organization standpoint, as well as a student, as well as people living life.
Absolutely. Right. I see it at UNLV. I see it with students and I see it clinically. So, you know, and I have those roles as administrator, as instructor, as clinician. So I'm often thinking about leadership and mental health, both in the people who I'm seeing, but then also the people with whom I interact in all of those contexts.
Right. So tell us about your journey in mental health, relationships, sex therapy.
Oh, it's still going on, isn't it?
Forever.
Right. Journey. So, you know, I initially, quite honestly, my journey started with really good mentorship. I got really turned on to the field of psychology by an amazing high school teacher and pursued that in my undergraduate degree. and had an extraordinarily good mentorship experience doing research with some of the faculty at Truman State University, and then decided to pursue my master's. And in my master's degree, I had an amazing mentor who really unquestionably supported me. Any idea I had, he thought was publishable. And so I started publishing some ideas and really got the publishing bug. And then leading into things related to infidelity and sex therapy, I really believe, and I said this to my husband this morning, possibly because he's the only person who's, you know, listening, because I've got that captive audience of him in the home. But what I said to him this morning, we were going over some of the news and some of the things that you talked about happening kind of globally and then happening in our country. And I said, I absolutely believe that mental health is the biggest public problem that we have in this world because of what you said about mental health and the people who are unhealthy and the effect that they have both physiologically and emotionally on so many other people. So when I was looking at some of that information and people's decision makings and how they affect other people, it became clear to me that when people experience anxiety, part of the way in which they try to deal with that is by roping in someone else to manage the anxiety for them. You know, maybe if we have a conflict between UNR and UNLV, we want to not deal with it with each other. So we sort of pull someone else. And I thought, well, how do I measure this? Well, the perfect example of that's infidelity. When you've got a relational problem, you sort of deal with that relational problem, not with your partner, but by stepping out and interacting with someone else, right?
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So that's how I sort of got into the sex stuff. I sort of actually began studying people's anxiety and their reaction to managing that anxiety, and it sort of led into sexual problems. Yeah,
so
kind of interesting.
How do you think, and you've already kind of answered this, but how do you think mental health plays a role in leadership then?
I think it plays a huge role. I think that people who are mentally healthy as leaders have the ability to be able to provide space for their employees or other people who they're mentoring, so that those people believe they have a vested interest in what happens with the program, what happens with the unit. Absolutely. But at the same time, those people who are mentally healthy leaders have the ability to give feedback to those other people in ways that are going to be helpful and constructive and not come from a place of ego, not come from a place of nastiness. So I think mental health has a huge impact on the way in which we mentor people, on the way in which we lead people, and also should have an impact on the on our decision makings and how to approach people who maybe aren't totally mentally healthy.
Yeah, that's great. And so how important is sex then? So you touched on you went into sex therapy, so you do family and marriage therapy. How much of that is sex, and how important is sex to relationships?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know if this was your experience, but it certainly was mine. When I got my bachelor's degree, I felt like I knew a ton of things. Right. And then I got my master's and I was like, I don't, you know, like some things. And since I've gotten my doctorate, and with every cohort of students that I teach, I realize how little I know.
Oh my goodness.
And what I've discovered about sex and how important it is it's really idiosyncratic to each individual and each couple.
Sure.
So I'll have tons of couples where they clearly have a diagnosable sexual problem, but because neither of them think it's a problem, it's not a problem. They don't want to talk about it.
Sure.
So it's not an issue. There are other couples who don't have a diagnosable problem, but their sex life is a problem to them. And then there are some people for whom one person's fine with the sex life and the other person's totally unhappy. And so that creates a sex problem.
Its own problem.
Right. Uh-huh. So it really is, I think, idiosyncratic to each couple.
Huh. And I think that it's an interesting point that you made about the doctorate, because I do believe, and maybe have said on the podcast before, that a doctorate is entirely about teaching you you're not the smartest person in the world.
Oh, so much.
It is. I mean, that's all they do is go,
all they do.
You thought that was a first thought, but we actually thought about that 3,000 years ago. So welcome to the world.
Right.
So I'd imagine it's even truer with sex, because it is so human dynamic, you know, created and delivered, right?
It is. It is. A lot of sex is about, it's about two things. And I'll give you a little hint here for all of you who are having kind of issues in your relationships. There's a study I read years ago, but I have found it to be absolutely 100% true. All couple relationships, sex included, and ones with sex or without, can be, the problems in those relationships are often boiled down into one of two problems. So it's not the dishes, the dog, the this, the that, the laundry, it's money. It's not never any of those things. It's either, and in some cases can be both, perceived neglect or perceived lack of control. So when I'm talking to people about sex problems, that's what I'm asking about. I'm trying to figure out whether the sex problem is a manifestation of issues of control in the relationship or an issue of perceived neglect. And that's how I'm working with treating that issue.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. I've saved everybody hundreds of thousands of dollars of therapy just with that.
There you go.
Now I've worked myself out of a job. Well, this is going well for me. Perfect.
So what challenges do people face in regards to their personal relationships? I mean, you've talked about kind of bringing it down to those two pieces, but does that spill over into professional lives?
Yeah. You know, one of the other things I found, and this could be a little bit of, you know, kind of my area of research. I study high risk sexual behavior and decision making in postmenopausal women. I study technology and couples and families. I study infidelity. I study women in academia. And probably thinking about that question, I think the biggest issue is technology and relationships.
Oh gosh, I agree. Yes.
What happens is because we're so accessible now, your phone blings and emails all hours of the night and day. That's interfering with personal life, right? But you feel like you have to respond. That's particularly true for women, actually. Mm-hmm. That affects women more than men. Men feel like they have the ability to set the boundaries and women don't. So you end up having the sort of work-life conflict that is now the result of technology. And leaders feel like they have to be responsive to all of these texts and emails. They have to be accessible, but that's totally going to compromise. Right. Mm-hmm. But that's totally going to compromise what happens and how you're being a leader in your relationship. And so I think it's about negotiating some of what goes on there.
Oh, negotiating is a good way to put it. And I think that I always talk about budgeting time and negotiating your technology. I love that. That's a fabulous takeaway for this.
Yeah. You know, so I did an interview years ago for maybe 2 years ago or so for Men's Health. And the editor of that magazine or the editor of that piece did an experiment with his girlfriend where they put down their phone for 30 days when they would get home from work. And this article in Men's Health talks about what happened in that 30 days. So it'd be really interesting to check out.
Bored the first day. They were in love again.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And he said they ended up getting engaged. So Paul Keita was the name of the writer on this piece, but it was a couple years ago in Men's Health. You might want to check that out.
Yeah, neat. And that's so true. My husband and I were laughing yesterday because we were both watching TV and sitting on the bed next to each other, also on our cell phones.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's just a whole thing. It just happens, right?
Oh, yeah.
How can that not impact the relationship? And it is the new reality for sure.
Yep.
What could everyone do then to spice up a little bit, spice up their sex lives or even their leadership then?
Well, what I constantly tell couples, and I think this is true for leadership as well, is the successful couples are ones that are flexible and supportive. Okay, that's really, really important. So couples who are flexible with one another have the ability to be able to navigate things that come their way, right? More so than rigid couples. That's where a lot of problems come in, specifically in terms of sex, rigidity of roles and socialization and such. And then if you're supportive of your partner, then there's more opportunity for growth. The same thing with leadership. You have to be flexible enough, or at least the way that I run the department or that I run the unit, is that everybody has to be at a place where they feel like they have ownership in the problems, ownership in the solutions, ownership in the unit. They feel like their voice matters, their voice counts. I'm supportive of all those people. At the same time, you can't be so flexible that it leads to chaos, right? You have to be able to make sure that flexibility is within meeting a common goal or meeting a common agenda. But you've got to have that flexibility. And when people feel like they're supported, they're going to work harder for you.
Absolutely.
And they're going to be more committed to the relationship, whether it's work or at home.
So you can take flexible in a intellectual sense, and then you can take flexible in a actual sense. So flexibility could help both at the same time.
It can.
Right?
Yep.
So yoga and helps mental health and helps sex.
It's true. Yeah.
No, it's true. So what experience or lesson or disaster have you learned from or experienced that you want to share?
Oh, God, you know, so many. I think the good thing is I've grown as a director over the few years. I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago. I'm not even the same person I was 2 years ago, which is really interesting.
That's nice, though.
And so I could recount, you know, a lot of horror stories. Unfortunately, people would be identifiable in that.
She's talking about me
now. Yeah, you'd actually know. Kind of, you know, unfortunate. Can't really do that. But the basic line is in the experiences that I've had, I've gotten a lot of people who are entitled. I've gotten a lot of the, you know, I'm not teaching this 2 days before class starts, or I've been here a year, I need a new title, I need more money. I've had students who will tell me that I'm wrong when I'm teaching a theory, and I'm like, hi, you just learned about it today. So actually, no. You know, I've been licensed for like, you know, many years now, so no, you can check out my 8 books if you don't believe me, right? Like, you know, a little bit like that, like, okay. So you get a lot of that entitlement, and you really have to balance listening to people's voices and managing that entitlement at the same time,
sure,
right? So in terms of lessons learned, I have figured out that it is not about hiring the person with the best vita. It is not about hiring the person with the best credentials, the top of the line, because the truth is, I can teach anyone how to do the job.
Sure.
I really can.
Right.
It is actually about hiring the kindest, most stable and grounded person. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Because that person you can teach to do the job. They're going to contribute to the work environment in a positive, supportive way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it even in my own unit. I just switched out a couple personnel, and just the feeling among the students and among the unit is so different and so much positive. We have so much more cohesion now as a unit. It wasn't about the vitas. It was about the quality of the individual.
Yeah. You know, it's like back to that train for attitude, or the Southwest idea of hire for attitude, train for skill, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I think that we used to do that in the late 80s, early 90s, and we've gotten away from it in this world of technology, because I don't get your resume unless you have the skills, right?
Well, in the university, they're moving toward a tier one or a top tier initiative, which means people who are publishing, getting grant dollars. We don't care if this person is a decent human being. We just know that they publish a lot and, you know, we can get grant dollars out of them.
So we have to balance that.
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of good people. There are certainly people who are not up to snuff and won't be able to do the job no matter how nice they are. But you look at that top group of resumes and you go, of this top group, what is my gut feeling? I think the other thing that's happening in this society is we're trying to unteach the gut and we're trying to impart logic. And I got to tell you, I think that is a step in the wrong direction.
I agree with
you. You know, we really have to be. And I do teach my students, you got to get grounded. You got to get centered. We're doing some yoga and meditation activities later at Heartkey
Park
today.
For flexibility.
Yeah. I'm going to be teaching the students about Reiki. I'm going to be dragging my Reiki table up there today. But it really is all about doing your gut check, because that is where you get most of your information. I also tell my clients that too.
That's good. You know, Malcolm Gladwell, Blink.
Oh,
he would
I love
agree,
that
right?
book. Yes.
I mean,
it
is so
love
much about
that book.
Instinct.
Yep. I read it twice.
Oh,
I
yeah. It changed my life. So if you haven't read it, you need to.
Please.
Malcolm Gladwell, Blink. Share with us then an action or a takeaway, something that people can start doing differently today.
You know, one of the things that I have found this, and this sounds totally ridiculous, you know, but very, very, because it's very, very simple, but maybe that's the beauty of it. It's important for leaders to be authentic and to make sure that you are bringing your own sense of safety and comfort and self-confidence to where you go so people can connect with you. What I have figured out over, you know, many years of watching students, watching faculty, watching clients, is that it comes down to this. Healthy people are congruent. That's it. Bottom line. Congruent people
aligned
are safe.
With themselves.
That's it. Congruent people are safe. And safe people you can be around. If you watch people's interactions and they act one way in one circumstance and totally different in another, they're not congruent. And whether or not that miscongruence affects you, or whether you say, well, that isn't something that I was interested in, you know, maybe it looked funny to other people, that level of incongruence is going to affect you if you interact with them in other ways.
Sure.
Healthy people are congruent. The minute that you see somebody who's incongruent across settings or incongruent, something's up, get the hell away. That's it.
And it could be something that's up in the moment for them, or it could be a symptom of a greater problem.
It could be. But, and when I say get the hell out, you know, certainly we're in situations where you have to work with people. When I say get the hell out, that means that you set boundaries.
Yeah,
you
sure.
set boundaries, and
emotional
your mind will
boundaries,
totally.
If anything.
Yeah, your mind will try to delude you. It'll try to explain away that event or that circumstance. But we talk in the program about when we're accepting students into our program, we don't ever want to talk ourselves into a candidate. If there is a red flag from any of the faculty, if any our guts go off,
cross them off.
That's it. We're
absolutely
done.
Absolutely agree.
We are done, because that is the biggest indicator of mental health. If you are not congruent, you are not mentally healthy.
And
bottom line.
It's probably true for a partnership or relationship, a sexual relationship.
Oh,
as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. And if there's no safety, there's not going to be a good sexual relationship.
Yeah, that's true. So if viewers want to get a hold of you, or listeners want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Well, they can check out my website at drkathertline.com, or I guess it's cathertline.com. They can check me out on Twitter at drkathertline. They can contact me at the university. UNLV always has a file on what I'm doing and where I'm living. So,
awesome.
And they can check out my books on Amazon.
That'd be great. Cool. Thank you so much for being
Thanks
here
for
today
having me.
And giving us all these delicious tools. Let's head out to our shout out.
Hi, I'm Heath. I'm working with Breakaway Bike Tours. You're here in very sunny, sunny London. It's doing its wonderful thing, which is basically raining on tourists, which is basically our way of keeping people coming back. But at the moment, we're in the lovely Brick Lane. It's a really wonderful area. It's very eclectic. It's become quite hipsterfied at the moment, and that's just because it's a very cool place to be in, you know. So my name's Heath, and you've been listening to Brandy on the Strategic Hotbox.
To Breakaway Bikes and to Heath from London, from beautiful cloudy London, and for giving us the shout out today. And also thank you to Dr. Kat for being our special guest here and giving us all the tips and tools. So now it's your favorite time, the best time of the episode, and that is time to kick some ass. Our number one is to disconnect. Kat said it very, very well in the fact that technology is interfering with relationships, or she's seeing that in her studies and research. I absolutely agree. An example of this is it's been a couple months ago now, but I was in the bath and I did one of these numbers and dropped my cell phone in the bath and then picked it up and then dropped it back down in and blah, juggled it for a couple seconds. And so it was like gone. And I thought to myself in that moment, not, oh, bummer, I just put the, you know, just killed my cell phone, which was part of it. But the most important piece is, why was I looking at my cell phone in the bath? And that's the key that in disconnecting is, when you do disconnect too, make sure you're actually disconnecting. Right? Don't be texting while you're getting a massage or on your phone while you're in the bath. If you're going to breathe for a moment, breathe fully. Commit to that moment as well. And disconnecting from technology is a big part of that. And we can check out that article in Men's Health Magazine as well. The second is exercise. I do believe very strongly that that physical exercise and physical health will lead to mental health, and they have a very strong interrelationship. Exercise is also, endorphins are fabulous for the brain, are great for the controlling of stress in the brain, and I urge you, and it happens to be one of the things that we don't get very often. I will sometimes set alarms on my cell phone to move every couple hours or hour, because if you're anything like me and you work in an office, that means I sit down on my booty all day long, right? So if I'm not out with you doing a session or a motivational training or a keynote thing, that means I'm in an office behind a computer doing one of the gremlins, right? And I know several of you can relate to that. And so sitting down and doing that all day isn't good for our body, isn't good for our wellness and health in general. Number three is to practice self-love. So however you want to take this, take the metaphor and run with it on this. But definitely practice self-love. It's important to be confident. It's important, just like my son in the spelling bee, to tell himself that he can do it. It's important in a relationship to go into those zones that Dr. Kat was sharing with us about you know, being safe or feeling in a place that you can communicate and you can be a part of it, and that you are loving the person that you, the body that you're living in, because this is the only chance. It's the only vehicle, you know, that we get in this life. And so love it, do whatever it takes to be a part of that in mental and physical ways. Number four, know that you're not alone. There are a lot of resources out there for people to work together. If you do have relationships in your life, talk to the people around you. Mental health is so important, and in so many cases, in going back and reading back, or, you know, hindsight 2020 kind of thing. I was even reading the book Columbine recently about the tragedy that happened 20 years ago now, or almost 20 years ago now, that if we had, in hindsight, you know, if we had only, should we have, that kind of stuff. If we'd been there for those individuals, maybe this wouldn't have occurred, and maybe it wouldn't have happened in the magnitude that it did. And mental health issues like that, it's about being in support for the people that are around you. So from an organizational standpoint, including that in wellness. And the last is spice things up. Woo! Spice things up. Whatever that looks like. So flexibility, yoga class, getting involved, learning, taking a class, reading one of Kat's books, you know, any of those kinds of things. Do what you have to do to kind of spice things up. Email me, contact us on the website. I'll give you all of my good pickup lines. I have a bunch of them, I promise you. But spice things up and have some fun in the process. That's your top five kick ass. again to Dr. Kat for being here on the episode today. We'd love to hear from you, anybody listening or watching, on what topics that you'd like to hear us tackle on the Hot Box. And that's at strategichotbox.com or email us at podcast@strategichotbox.com. Until next time, get out there, spice things up, and kick some ass.